B-Pod Studios.
Fred, hello! Hello! Hello!
Hello!
Boopity bump for the book.
Hey, guys. Hey.
Green rings, French fries, and
Manny's gonna cruise.
Smoke them up, boys.
I'm the son of the pope.
How do you like that?
Hello! Welcome to the show!
Count it.
Thank you very much, Mr. Gene Oakland. You're an intelligent American man. You know I come from oldest country in the world, Persia. That's not the first belt I get. Okay, I expect you be intelligent, Dad. You explain to that American people, I'm not that excited about this belt. I get a gold medal and belt since 18 years old to right now.
Good morning, everybody. Good morning. We are the Toucher and Rich radio program, Town Fair Tire Studios. You can watch us on Twitch at twitch.tv. That's right, two deaths yesterday. The Iron Sheik and comedian Pat Cooper.
I don't mean to be disrespectful of the dead, but who's Pat Cooper?
Comedian. He was on a... You'd recognize him, I think, if you saw him.
Okay.
He's old. He was really old. I thought he'd actually already died. He did famous Stern episodes. He was a big, like, New York comic, old guy, like, old school kind of.
Oh, okay.
But there you go. The Iron Sheik and Pat Cooper.
Yeah. Iron Sheik, that is a... It's funny. I've got some clips later on. I went through some Iron Sheik... I wasn't a wrestling fan back in the day, but even if you weren't a wrestling fan, everyone knew who the Iron Sheik was. It was like there were a handful of wrestlers that went past you sitting there watching it on whatever night it was. Was it Friday night that wrestling used to be on?
I don't remember.
That crossed over and just, they were the guys on the t-shirts. The kids at school would wear them. Sheik was one of them. Andre
Camel
the
Clutch,
Giant.
Baby. Yeah.
But
with a boner.
Well, I actually have a clip that I'll play later on of him commenting on that moment.
Someone, oh, good.
It's pretty great. Like somebody showed it to him and had him do a play-by-play and was like, what's going on here? But the Iron Sheik, even the stuff that was on television is, they're all things that need to be edited now. There's certain terms and phrases that he used that I guess were somewhat acceptable, even on, like, you know, television back in the day, that you can't air anymore. On top of that, for somebody who in many of his interviews did not seem to like gay people that much, he wanted to do very gay things to many of his enemies.
Well, yes. That's how he would punish you.
That's right.
The word humble was used
a lot. Yeah, that's how he would humble you.
But he would fornicate with you.
Yes. Yeah, to humble you.
Yet he would call you bad names for being gay, yet he would want to do very gay things to you.
Yeah, to humble you.
It was very strange.
It wasn't.
What's the problem?
No.
Well, I would say self-loathing might be the one thing that I think of when I hear it.
It's not gay when it's to humble someone. What he was doing is he was establishing, it was like prison sex.
Yeah, male dominance is what this is about.
He was establishing his being at the top of the pecking order.
Yes. But then he would call them like a horribly offensive word for being that and then say he wanted to do those things.
No. Rich, I don't think you're understanding. If I'm mounting you in order to dominate you, you're the gay one, and I am. You're the jabroni and the gay one, and I'm showing you that I'm gathering your respect.
Yes,
by doing that,
I'm teaching you the way things are.
Yeah,
is what this is.
I'm teaching you some respect
using the love language that you understand.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes,
I've got to be honest. I'm somewhat shocked that the Iron Sheik made it to 81 years. I mean, these wrestlers obviously have a much shorter shelf life than most people, but especially when you see just how wrecked this guy got and some of the pain he'd been dealing with physically. His back, I think, was completely jacked up. For I think the last 20 years, he was almost immobile.
Well, his nephews are the ones that, like, took over and made the Twitter thing and all that stuff and like kind of like galvanized his career. But there's a they made a documentary of him, and in that documentary they're like in a car and they're like focused in a window where they had dropped him off.
Yeah.
And he's buying heroin.
Oh geez.
So when he was 81 when he died. So I would imagine that he was probably in his late 60s when he was buying heroin.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, because all I think of, you know, for the past like 20 years or so was just you would see him and he would seem almost like crippled or in pain. But I mean, 81 years old. Matter of fact, when he died, there was part of me that wasn't quite sure that he wasn't dead yet, because I had heard, you know, because I had heard the same thing that someone had taken over his account. But that's, you know, that generation, shockingly, I mean, how old's Hogan now? Hogan's got to be like 70, right?
Well, Ric Flair, if you listen to the way he lived, he's still alive. And his drinking was just nuts. And I'm sure you add pain pills to that scenario. Maybe just goes to show you, do enough roids.
Yeah, Flair's 74. Hogan is 69.
Hey, now.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, you're right. Ric Flair lived a hard life. There's no question.
And also, the guy lived a stable life. These wrestlers are married 4 times, divorced 4 times. The Iron Sheik was married for 47 years.
Yeah, but if you watch the documentary,
it's not one of those things.
Well, first of all, he's insane. And well, so, like, so they live in this, like, ranch house in way suburban Atlanta. Very modest. And his wife is like this hausfrau, like modest church lady. Mm-hmm. They were married for 47 years. I find it very difficult to believe that it was a conventional marriage.
Ah.
Because the Sheik, he was crazy. I mean, he was insane. And it took his nephews to like harness all of that. But I don't know. I think that it was like given the day. I don't think that he was a stable influence around the old house.
You know what else is also funny is that obviously Vince and WWE, they made anyone into anything. Iron Sheik was actually from Iran. Remember the tag team of Jay and Jules Strongbow who played Native Americans? They were two Italian guys. You know, Sheik
actually
played.
You can't just find some Native Americans.
Apparently not. So Sheik was an actual guy from Iran who played an Iranian.
Yeah, he was a wrestler, Olympic wrestler.
Yeah.
Who had the ability to have a distended belly with and still visible abdominal muscles.
I had to look and check to see whether Nikolai Volkov was still alive.
Oh, yeah. Well, he's Volkov. Kicking. I remember that.
What's that? He's dead.
Oh, he just died.
He, like 2018, so not long ago. But he died. He was 70 years old when he died.
The tag team of Mr. Fuji and Mr. Saito, are they still alive?
I don't know. But Volkov and Iron Sheik, they were like tag team guys, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
that's
yeah,
what
yeah.
I thought.
Fuji and Saito and the Strongbow Brothers, those were the three.
See, now you're getting into an area
now
that
we're
I was
now
not
Bob
familiar
Backlund,
with.
Bob Backlund, baby. Let's
Russia,
go.
Russia, number one. Iran, number one.
He sounds like
America.
It sounds like Aztec Gino. Yeah. John Wallach, number one.
I think Gino's got a little Iron Sheik in him, I think.
I think he's stolen the act completely is what he's done.
I believe so. At least the no shirt part.
Now, Mr. Fuji and Mr. Saito both dead. That's too bad.
Well, Mr. Fuji had a second act.
Yes, as a manager, right?
Yeah, he was able to he was able to thrive in retirement. As you know who he controlled?
I don't remember.
I believe he controlled Carmella the Ugandan Giant. I believe when Carmella would go and walk away, Mr. Fuji was there to restrain Carmella and bring Carmella back.
According to this, his first client, George the Animal Steel.
Yeah, he was good with the people that were uncontrollable.
Yeah.
Because George the Animal Steel would just start eating the turnbuckle.
Right.
He's an animal. He was an absolute animal then.
Wow. He was a football coach in suburban Detroit.
George the Animal Steel?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. And it was real weird to hear him talk. Because, I mean, he was old when he was George the Animal, like at least when we were kids.
Yeah.
And then they would always do something on the news every year with him.
Yeah.
And he would, like, talk normal, and it was real strange. Because remember, he would look at the camera like, and he'd be eating the turnbuckle. They're like, don't eat the turnbuckle.
Yokozuna.
Yeah.
That's the guy.
John, you have to understand, like, a decade after that, or maybe even a little more than a decade after that. So I lived maybe a mile from the WCW power plant.
I was watching the WCW and the WWF at the time. I was watching those as well. When I first got interested in wrestling, those were the guys I watched.
What I'm saying is that you don't understand how surreal it was to live near where all of the wrestlers live, because you would just go to the grocery store there, which was Kroger.
Kroger, right.
And you would see, like, Scott Steiner shopping for donuts. You know what I mean? Like, you would see, like them just, like, with a shopping cart. Diamond Dallas Page was all over the place. Him and Kimberly Page, the power plant was about a mile away from where I lived, but a half mile away was, what was it called? Main Event Fitness was the name of the workout place where a lot of them would go and they'd work out. I don't know why they didn't work out at the power plant. I guess they wanted their own place away from, you know, where they could get the good stuff in the locker room.
Used to love Diamond Dallas Page.
Well, DDP was, I mean, he's another guy who, you know, would always wear, like, the burlap shirt unbuttoned to his chest.
He was the first guy I saw when he would go out to the ring. They had pyro for him.
They
all four ring posts would go off when he'd get into the ring. It was great.
But, I mean, you would see these guys at, like, Checkers, which was a burger place, just eating a burger. You know, they were just wandering all over the place. They'd be everywhere.
By the way, I read a story, and I don't know, Fred, I think you read this too, about how Diamond Dallas Page was discovered. He apparently was a bouncer to, like, a low-end strip club that when all the wrestlers would come into town, and he made friends with the guys, and the guy's like, yeah, you should try out. And that's it. He had no life. He was just, like, collecting barely above minimum wage to kick people's asses from touching the strippers.
It's funny, when I watched that movie The Wrestler with Mickey Rourke, obviously it's based loosely on Jake the Snake, but the look has got to be Diamond Dallas Page. Like, when I watched that, I'm like, that's exactly how Diamond Dallas Page, like, carried himself normally. He would just wear that. It's like, it was a burlap, but it was just like this, like heavy flannel type thing that he would always wear with these, like, jorts. That was the look.
And then there was a bunch of can-do kids from Seattle that made it a culture. Grunge. Mm-hmm. They took his shirt and made it grunge. Mm-hmm. So there you have it. The great Iron Sheik. Very dead. Nikolai Volkoff, very dead. Mr. Fuji.
Mr. Saito,
very dead. Dead. The Backlund brothers, I would assume, are dead. Certainly, Bruno Sammartino, one of the great technical wrestlers.
I'm told that Sergeant Slaughter is still alive.
Oh, yeah, he's still alive. He was just doing something.
Is that stolen valor, or was he really a sergeant?
Oh, he was an active sergeant in the military.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, while he was doing it. He would have to leave occasionally to go off on missions. Sergeant Slaughter. They never got that jaw fixed. He always said, I want the world's biggest overbite. All right, Rich, what is coming up already? There's so much action in the world.
Believe it or not, the Red Sox, still very sloppy. But even for them, they had a new level of slop, slop, slopperoo last night.
All right, we will have that for you in just a moment.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Dutcher and Rich continues on the Sports Hub.
Recapping what you missed, it's Dutcher and Rich.
Hey, what happened last night is delivered by Granite City Electric's GCE Night Train electrical contractors. Order your materials for overnight delivery from the Granite City Electric GCE Night Train, and you won't have to worry about what happened last night. Your materials are waiting for you at the job site by 6 a.m. Go to GCENightTrain.com.
Will the Red Sox lose because of sloppy defensive play? Tell me if you've heard this one before.
The second baseman. Now Bell bangs it with a third. It goes off the glove of Devers. Ramirez scores the go-ahead run.
Wow. This is unbelievable.
Wow, wow, wow. We knew Boston had problems with their defense, guys. We didn't know it was going to play like this, though.
Oh, man. Tell you what.
See how this one scored.
This is routine.
Okay. Is that the one that where there were two errors on the same play?
No, that was right. The play after that.
Oh, okay.
Two hitters later.
All right. So there are two errors in the same play that happened before that. That eventually led to the Guardians getting on the board. But because two errors aren't enough, the Red Sox said more.
The second baseman.
Where is Clip?
That's the same, but it's the same play.
All right. I'm missing the clip here. All right. Well, either way, there was a Rafael Devers screw up.
That was the one we. That was the one we heard on a routine grounder to him.
The second baseman. Now Bell bangs it with a third. It goes off the glove of Devers. Ramirez scores the go-ahead run.
Wow.
There we go. Well, yeah. All right. It just seems like it's Groundhog Day.
Ground ball the second. He kicked it through at the first. Tristan Casas couldn't handle it. And he was charged with an error on the play and a run scored.
I mean,
that was two batters before the play you just heard.
So you've got two errors in one play, and then you've got another error after that, the bobbled Rafael Devers scoop that leads
three
to the Guardians
different
run.
Infielders made errors in the same inning, and the one guy who didn't make the error is the one you thought would be most prone to do it, the shortstop, Kiki Hernandez.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a absolute circus out there right now, and Boston drops one figuratively and literally last night, 5-2, the final score. It also didn't help that the Sox's bats were really quiet yesterday. They had five hits total, leaving eight men on base, but it was all about the sloppiness, as it has been all season long, and even for the Red Sox. Last night was special, with a season high in errors of three. Here is Alex Cora.
This is who we are right now. And, you know, we just, at some point, you have to slow the game down. I think that's it, you know. And the first one is effort, right? Valdi goes, to this side of the bag. Kike is right there, but that's effort, you know. And then the other one, Casas doesn't make the play, and Valdi's trying to pick him off and flips it, and the ball goes, to the dugout. So, you know, lack of effort is not, you know, lack of execution it is.
Make sure they change that whole Jordan's promotion to that they can get through a game without an error. Everyone rents free furniture. it's really gotten gratuitous. As a matter of fact, I mean, out of the last five games, has there been two without an error?
Yeah. No,
three out of the last five games?
They've had at least one.
They're
the worst fielding team in the American League. They're one of the worst fielding teams in all of Major League Baseball. But it's not a surprise. None of this is Cora's fault.
Dan just asked a great question. Who's worse in the National League? Like, who's doing worse than this?
There are two or three teams, actually, that are worse than this.
I would like to know who they are.
I'm all forgetting it, all forgetting that fact for you.
Well, I mean, listen, the Sox, they've got one more game tonight against the Guardians. But then things get interesting, as you know, by all of the apocalyptic pictures coming out of New York from those Canadian wildfires. The air quality still stinks so bad that yesterday's Yankees game was postponed to a doubleheader today, but that's not even guaranteed. There's a chance that that game might not be played if the air stays as raw as it is. It's weird. It's like here in Boston, it's cleared up pretty well. I mean, you take a look outside, it doesn't look that bad. I don't know what technically the air quality was yesterday, but it sure as hell didn't look or feel like
terrible.
It did the day before.
No.
But Philadelphia, they postponed a game yesterday. New York, they did the same thing. Well, New York was as bad as I've seen it. That was yesterday was worse than the day before.
They were canceling indoor events in New York.
I wonder if
WNBA game that was canceled because of the air quality yesterday.
For the first time, Los Angeles is looking at New York like, you pussies. Like, we don't cancel stuff when there's fires like here.
We deal with this every single day.
They're not coming in from foreign lands.
But the Red Sox have a series at Yankee Stadium starting tomorrow. It depends. What are we hearing about whether or not this is going to move out? Because, you know, as Dan was saying, it's all about the jet stream. And as of yesterday, and that's why it kind of snaked around Boston and it's hit Philadelphia the way that it has. So what do we know?
All we know right now is that conversations have been taking place between the Yankees, Major League Baseball, and the Red Sox. Contact has already been made. They did it apparently yesterday. So, all right, what are we going to do?
Have you heard a Yankee fan talk about Aaron Judge yet? About Aaron Judge being hurt?
He hurt his toe. That's
yeah,
right.
Yeah. But have you ever heard a Yankee fan? You know, say what you want, but it's terrible for baseball.
What? That Aaron Judge is injured?
Yes.
Or
terrible for baseball.
Okay.
You know, there might be some Met fan out there that, you know, thinks it's good, but it's not.
Uh-huh.
It's terrible for baseball.
A judge can't play.
No, he could be gone for quite some time.
Well, that's unfortunate. That never happens to him. And it never happens to Stanton. Never happens to any of those guys.
There's probably some Met fan who's happy they didn't pay him all the money.
Yeah.
But it's not good for baseball.
By the way, there were three teams worse than the Red Sox fielding until yesterday. Pittsburgh and Washington were worse, but those last three errors dropped the Red Sox to second to last. San Francisco was worse.
Okay. I'd like to see some of those low light reels.
San Francisco. Yeah.
San Francisco is worse.
All right. And another thing that I was looking up at the regular news. It wasn't even like the sportsy news. And they were talking about the potential starting pitcher tonight for the Red Sox, Matt Dermody. Am I pronouncing
Dermody.
His last name? Dermody? Okay.
Yeah, Matt Dermody.
And they're saying that there was a big controversy about something that he did on Twitter, saying that he had a homophobic tweet. I read the tweet. The guy sucks. He's obviously stupid. But the weird thing about it is that the tweet was 2 years ago. The Red Sox had addressed it during spring training. I guess he had been reprimanded, and this has been something that they had brought up.
Well, they didn't notice it because he had erased it from his account before he was signed to the Red Sox.
So
they checked his Twitter account, didn't see anything, and then, of course, the screenshots popped up afterwards.
Don't you think you can get rid of that? We're going to let all the gay people know you don't like them. Not so fast, buddy.
Yeah, I mean, as I said, I read what the guy put, and it sucks. But at some point, I mean, like how, like you're, everyone is going to screw up at some point. And if this is the one time he screwed up, and we're bringing it up 2 years later, even though it sounds like this has been dealt with, did he like apologize?
He apologized. He was pitching in Japan at the time. He took a religious tact, you know, as to why he was against it.
This was all about, you know, like gays going to hell. He didn't like use a slur, but it was basically one of these, if you're gay, you're going to hell type of thing. So, I mean,
so he was just stating fact.
Well, I mean, if you believe the type of heathen, you know, behavior that he,
what led him to feel the need to do that?
Maybe he thinks that he's going to be with Kirk Cameron as we're all perishing on Earth and he's floating up on a cloud.
Was that like a little,
the Left Behind stuff, you know?
Yeah. Was he getting dabs to God? Like, all right, I got this guy.
I'll
take the wheel here.
I'll show these guys who's boss. They're not living a tough life anyway.
God, they made Twitter for a reason. I got your back. Hey, gays.
Right, why do you
got a one-way ticket to the old furnace?
What an idiot. But I just saw that on the news. And as much as I think the guy's an idiot, I think that if this was something that happened 2 years ago, the guy's apologized.
Also, just because he doesn't like gays doesn't mean he can't pitch in the... Listen, I mean, obviously, I'm joking, and it's incredibly, just like Rich said, dumb. Like, it's even dumber than a joke is a joke. Just pronouncing that gays are going to hell is A, unnecessary, and B, speaks. I would guess the vast majority of people doing that, very low IQs. But if that's all the guy did, I mean, the guy's allowed to think that. I mean, you can't tell him he can't. I mean, well, in Fred's world, I mean, I wouldn't. I mean, if that's the way he feels, I mean, great. I mean, it doesn't really affect anything.
He's misguided and dumb, but it shouldn't.
Yeah, but
you know,
it also doesn't affect anything. I mean, I don't think he's like, you know, in charge of what happens when we die.
He's the one calling the FCC when Lil Nas X dresses up as the devil and dances around. Right.
I'm all confused, and it's got me, my hairs in the back of my neck standing up. I'm all prickly.
Yeah. So he will be most likely pitching this evening.
Yep.
Possibly in the Flames. That's going to be in. It would be appropriate if it was in the Flames of New York.
Yeah, should have saved
the fire in the
have
sky.
Have a pitch tomorrow.
Maybe they should save him for San Francisco.
So that is tonight. You know
what goes on over there.
Final game against the Guardians, and let's hope that. Boy, I do kind of want to see how bad the Giants are, because it really is. Every single day you turn on, you know, the highlights of the Red Sox, or you just happen to tune in, and chances are you're going to see a screw up.
There's no way it's as fun with the Giants.
Right, because it has been kind of
There's no way it's
humorously over the top.
It's as little leaguey as it is with the. I mean, there's ways to make errors in the major leagues where you're like, eh. But the Red Sox have really been putting on a clinic of bad baseball.
I feel bad for Cora because it's not his fault. The people are there. They have about four guys playing out of position, and Valdez, the second baseman. The book on him when they called him up was all hit, no field. So he's your everyday second baseman. This is what's happening.
But there's also like weird ones like Devers should have had that. You know,
Devers
what I mean?
Is a terrible fielder. Yeah. He's had a much better year this year. He looks like a Gold Glover compared to what he's surrounded by. But fundamentally, he is a mediocre to poor fielder to begin with. I mean, as I said, you take a look at his numbers the last two or three years, he's not a good fielder at third.
Well, the whole idea was that he was going to move to first
or
eventually.
Be a DH later in his career. He's not a third baseman that's going to be there for 20 years.
Is there a stat, because you're stat man. I mean, listen, you got the glasses
on, right? Stats. Yes.
Is there a stat for runs scored as a result of errors?
Yes.
Like, okay. Because I would like to know.
Unearned runs.
Is it just completely unearned runs?
Unearned runs, yeah.
Okay. Well, there you go. I've got to think that the Red Sox have to be the leader in the clubhouse.
I would imagine.
Because this is just, it's atrocious.
Yeah, it's bad.
And it's multiple errors in each game, too.
And they're doing it in ways that are, again, like people being out of position, not hanging on to the ball, trying to make plays after a play's already over. It's real, like, basic crap that they're failing at. And it's to the point where it's kind of fun to watch someone who, for a living, all they have to do all day is field ground balls, not be able to do it is a little interesting. I mean, say what you will about being out of position, but, I mean, 11 errors?
Yeah.
I mean, you should, if you're I mean, Kiki Hernandez was obviously always, like, the best player on his team. You should be able to field ground balls. That's all. I mean, he should be able to do it. That's all he's got to do all day is field ground balls. He should be more proficient. All right, Rich, what's coming up?
Mr. Jokic ended up dominating again last night. Did something that no one has ever done in a finals game and didn't crack a smile the entire time.
No, he's not a man who's full of frivolity.
His post games are becoming my favorite thing to watch. He is all business without being condescending.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's not fake all business. The dude just seems like he's going to work. This is not a. It's like he doesn't play on a basketball team. He's like going to the factory.
He does. He brings a thermos with him.
Why does it have to be the factory?
It just feels like the office. Because it's like a blue collar job. The guy just goes to the factory and goes home and doesn't.
Blue collar cosplay.
It really is. Yeah, it is.
I got it.
All right. We'll have that for you. Hear the headline.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Now back to more Toucher and Rich, presented by FanDuel Sportsbook on Boston's home for sports, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Hey, we are Toucher and Rich, and we're presented by FanDuel Sportsbook. Make every moment more with FanDuel. And let me tell you this, is that at 6:55 this morning, you get a chance for Massachusetts is for Lovers tickets featuring this band, Rise Against, Alkaline Trio, and many more at Xfinity Center, September 17th, courtesy of Live Nation. Tickets on sale now through all Ticketmaster outlets.
How can one look so labored yet make it look so easy?
Murray goes to the right hand, gets a pick from McCola, stops, throws it back to Joker, head fake on the jumper, drives in on Adebayo, shoots over him, jumper's good!
I saw somebody, maybe it was Jeff Van Gundy, who said something yesterday that I found like dead on. I don't think there's a player I've seen in the NBA, I can't remember one, who's had more shots roll around the rim and then go in than Nikola Jokic. And maybe it's just a testament to how awkward his shot is and how just belabored he is and the weirdness that he plays. But my God, he is just dominant. And Denver,
maybe his brothers threaten the rim.
So it was watching the Jokic brothers has been fantastic. And I'll give Charlotte Wilder a lot of credit because she knows what the people truly want to see. She's been going to these games and posting videos of the Jokic brothers in the crowd. And there's one where they're hanging out there with Jamal Murray's dad, and they seem like, yeah. And the dad, I can tell, is like, oh, these guys again. All right. And they give him this big hug. And if they win, there's going to be more footage of the Jokic brothers than there is of actual Nikola
they're in the
Jokic.
Locker room. Oh, they're in the locker room.
Oh, there's no question. Yeah. Like, they're going to lose their minds. But Denver, they bounce back. They route the Heat 109-94. They take game three, move the series to 2-1. And Jokic has just been absolutely absurd. As a matter of fact, he became the first player in NBA history with more than 30 points, more than 20 rebounds, and more than 10 assists in an NBA Finals game. On top of that, Jokic and Jamal Murray, the first pair of teammates with a 30-plus point triple-doubles each in the same game in NBA regular or postseason history. It was just a stomping last night. And it was also one of those games where, we've said it before, Jimmy Butler could be a great closer, but Jimmy Butler can also completely disappear. And he was gone for the majority of that game. It is strange how that works with a player that seems to be that terrifying.
Yeah, who they are comparing to Jordan, some guys. Yeah, it is odd.
We were talking about how Eric Spoelstra, you know, adjusted and made Jokic a scorer and not a passer. And then Michael Malone did the same thing to both Adebayo and Butler last night. He's like, you guys can score as many points as you want. We're just going to make sure that the other guys don't do anything. And that's exactly what happened last night. He said, all right, we dare you to beat us by yourselves. And they couldn't do it because Denver's much deeper.
So Jokic was asked about that crazy stat line that he had, being the first player in NBA Finals history to have 30-plus points, 20-plus rebounds, and 10-plus assists.
When you have a line that's never been accomplished before in Finals history, what do you think of that?
To be honest, I just think it's a win, you know, because if we lose, nobody's going to even mention it. I mean, to be honest, I don't care.
He does.
It's just a stat. I don't care. Time to leave.
I like Brad Stevens entering the press pool. By the way, Haslam played last night.
Yep, that's right. Got a little time in there.
0 minutes.
Did I hear? I think Mike told me that he's now officially the oldest player in an NBA Finals game ever.
Yeah, he's 42.
He's
yeah.
officially the oldest person in an NBA arena ever.
That might be the case. Jokic talked about what was the thing that got this team to turn around after game two.
Dinner you guys had at Jeff Green's house was very well documented. To what extent is tonight's victory a psychological victory, and to what extent is that a result of great team building like that dinner?
He has a nice house.
I brought the goat for your home. What do you want me to do with the goat? The goat is for your home. Dick goat.
Kevin Durant actually said something funny, and he ended up deleting the tweet. And they're talking about, I forget what the whole thing was. He was saying, Jokic is just different. Like, he doesn't care about the celebrations. He just wants to go, after the game, FaceTime his horse.
I have a follow-up for that.
I brought you Wonder Bread. You do no line for you today.
Durant said he wants to go home and FaceTime his horse.
You know what the funny part about that is? And it's like that puzzle piece clicking into place. I remember when Jokic won his first MVP. He wasn't here. He was home in Serbia. And they had to bring him in on satellite.
I brought you Virgin.
he was in front of the stage.
The Virgin stays.
He was in the stable with his horse.
Of course he is.
I didn't think about that until now.
It's the only thing that understand the Jokic.
It was funny because Michael Malone, who's the coach of the Nuggets, he's been somewhat of a hard-o during this series. He said he had a little bit of a moment during the press conference yesterday.
Christian Brown. I have to give Christian a lot of love. I felt his play. What a bad press room, by the way.
I thought Christian Brown's play was fantastic.
Okay, when that clip first came out, I thought he was kind of pulling like a Belichick, you know, calling out all the media there. But apparently somebody who was at the press conference said that they put where the Nuggets spoke right next to this hallway that had a bunch of like fans banging sticks and stuff. And he's talking about where the actual press room was. But doesn't stop him from still being a hardo. I think we've heard that several times during this whole
Yeah, that was kind of a hardo thing anyway.
Yeah, I guess to say
the
that.
The fans
sure.
want to bang sticks. I mean, come on.
Sure, let them bang the sticks. But in the world of the NBA, there's two names that have been floated around over the past couple of days. One just yesterday, a potential suitor for the Celtics. Chris Mannix yesterday said that Chris Paul, who yesterday was he released?
Waved. They had a conversation about his future, whatever.
Yeah, basically they were like, you know, we're going to kind of let you take a look around. And it looks like, according to Chris Mannix, the teams that should be aggressive, both L.A. teams, he said Boston, which could be on the hunt for more playmaking, Miami even. A lot of possibilities. And I saw a lot of back and forth, a lot of people talking about Chris Paul. Do you bring Chris Paul in here? Could Chris Paul make a difference? Chris Paul can't play.
Yes.
He's injured all the
Thank
time.
You. And he doesn't shoot threes and he doesn't play defense.
Listen, Chris Paul, when he's healthy, there's stuff we've seen over even the last couple of years that you've been like, wow, this guy still got it. But my God, look at the amount of games that he's been injured.
Yep.
He doesn't shoot threes and he doesn't play defense. It's perfect fit for the Celtics.
You also don't need a point guard right now.
Well, no, you could use a distributor for his point guard, but you also need a guy who can shoot threes and play defense.
He doesn't play defense anymore. He's 36, 37, 38. I have to look specifically.
I think Richard said he's 38.
Yeah, 38. Just turned 38.
Dan did.
He's 38 years old. I am of the mind that if you could convince him to say, okay, we need you in a backup role, we only want you for 15 or 20 minutes a game, and we need you to take the veteran's minimum. By the way, all three things that he'll probably say no to. But if you could convince him to do that,
tonight, sure.
If you could do that and have him be the backup to Marcus Smart, that's a perfect role for him.
He's going
to
be on the Lakers like as soon as possible.
Yeah, you're probably right.
To ensure they don't win a championship.
What's that?
To ensure they don't win a championship.
but I think that he obviously would fit in very well there. And he's going to be a Laker. I can almost... Why would you go anywhere else right now if the Lakers want you and you know LeBron's going to want
if
him?
If you still want the playing time, if you still think you can play 30 or 35 minutes a night, which you can't, but if you still think you can, then yes, the Lakers are the place to go.
Was he one of LeBron's banana boat buddies? Wasn't that... It was Dwayne Wade...
LeBron, Carmelo.
And I think it was Chris Paul.
Was Paul the other guy?
The famous picture of them all smiling on the banana boat?
Yeah, in Miami on the old banana boat.
I think it was the four of them on the... I don't even think Carmelo was on it, but I do believe Chris Paul was one of the banana boat buddies. I'm getting a thumbs up. Who's the mystery fourth player? Am I wrong? Or is it just those three?
No, there's four.
No, banana boat. Any good banana boat's going to have more than three places.
Yeah, there was four people on it.
And is Carmelo the fourth?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, there you go, John. Very good. Very good.
The B-ball boys both can high five. We got a guy in the banana boat.
And then, of course, there is the talk of would you trade Jaylen Brown for Damian Lillard, where Damian Lillard was on Showtime's The Last Stand yesterday, which is something. And he was asked hypothetically about being traded to one of four teams, the Knicks, Nets, Miami Heat, or Boston Celtics. And Lillard might raise some eyebrows around here.
If one of those trades went through, out of those teams, which one would you be like, that's not too bad?
Miami, obviously. Miami is the obvious one. And Bam is my dog. Bam is my dog, for real. But, I mean, I think Miami the obvious one. Brooklyn is obvious one. Is another obvious one because Mikal Bridges is my dog, too. So.
So he did not even mention the Celtics.
No, I didn't want to play.
No.
Celtics came in fourth out of four there.
No, they came in nothing out of four.
He didn't mention the Knicks, did he?
I don't know.
So at least so maybe you could say, hey, third.
Not here is the answer to your question.
I'll tell you what, Lillard to the Heat would be amazing. I mean, that would be, if that happened, what a pain in the ass for the Celtics.
What do the Heat have to give up?
If I'm the Heat and Portland's like, we'll trade you Damian Lillard for Jimmy Butler, do you do it?
No, they wouldn't do that. Well, look at all the guys who are getting their value up right now
right.
through the playoffs.
But the salaries
Gabe
have
Vincent,
to match.
I mean, well.
The salaries have to match, and Lillard's making a lot of money. So Butler is the only guy I think, without looking, is probably in that stratosphere.
Can you give him two Duncan Robinsons? Just double them up?
Yeah.
And a Tyler, well, Duncan Robinson, Tyler Harrell, that might get it done. They're both making a ridiculous amount of money.
I don't think
if
Portland
you say Hellman's
that.
Three times in the mirror, two Duncan Robinsons show up.
It's true. It's like the Candyman. He's a he ends up just showing up. And finally, Lionel Messi has moved to the MLS or is going to. This is an interesting story because originally, when you told me this, when it broke yesterday morning, you were telling me that he was going to Miami. I'm like, well, then that means that he's going to be playing this season, and we started looking at the schedule, trying to figure out when it was going to be against the Revolution, and it ends up not being until next year, or next season, rather. But I got to be honest, if Lionel Messi comes to Gillette Stadium,
yeah.
will that be the first time that they sell out a yes. Revolution game?
I believe so. I just
open up the upper bowl for that one.
Have they ever sold out a yeah, Revolution game?
I think they have.
No, with all of
no.
the seats?
No. Available
no.
seating, yes, not upper bowl.
I'm talking sellout, yes. sellout.
Because if you think of it, he is out of, like, for kids.
Oh, he's the guy.
He's
him and
probably,
Ronaldo.
Yeah, he's probably, like, a top five guy in all sports for, like, kids.
Yep, Messi and Ronaldo. Those are the two jerseys you see on kids all over.
Yeah, so, and, you know, he's top five soccer player of all time, I believe. I think that argument could be made. I don't know anything about soccer. But I think you are right, Rich. I think that Messi has the kind of, like, look, if it wasn't in Foxborough and you handed me tickets and I didn't have anything to do.
hell yeah, I'd go.
I'd see Messi. Now, sure. Am I going to go down to Foxborough and sit in traffic? No.
Now, do you know how much this deal is worth? Because the one thing that I heard
ownership
that makes
stake.
This special
That's,
is that
starts it,
well,
Fred.
The one thing that I heard makes it special is that he might be getting a share of the Apple TV Plus sign-up. Because they are now partners with the MLS.
Not only that, he gets the option for part ownership in Inter Miami FC. He gets a piece of the new subscriptions after he signs, and he gets a piece of the Adidas contract. All of the new gear that Inter Miami sells.
All right, then the MLS is pretty screwy as far as being able to just like get around any kind of like fake. Are they capped? Do they have a salary cap?
No idea. I think that they probably all just went like, oh my god, oh my god, oh my god.
Right, and everyone in the league was like, yes, because they need to get a home sell on shirt. Break every rule.
I don't think there's a number involved.
Yeah,
I really don't.
If there's any rules, I'm sure that they were meant to be broken in this case. Car number 10 right now to the Harbor One Bank Contest line, 617-931-0985. We'll score a pair of tickets to the Massachusetts for Lovers Festival featuring Rise Against Alkaline Trio and many more at the Xfinity Center, September 17th, courtesy of Live Nation. Tickets now on sale through all Ticketmaster outlets. Man by name of Bankroll Boys Dan Lifshatz will be joining us in just a moment. Is he coming in or is he going to – he's going to be here. He's going to be here in studio, right, sitting with us. Dan Lifshitz from the Bankroll Boys in just a moment.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.